strength training is such an important aspect when fat loss is a focus, you know, so the focus really is on stripping our bodies of fat, not muscle. So we want to make sure when we're losing weight that we're actually predominantly losing fat, not muscle at the same time.
Welcome to the D8 Training Podcast, your guide to training and vitality. I'm Anne-Marie Antic, your host. 40 to 60% of individuals who join gyms or engage in fitness programs do so with the intention of losing weight or improving their body composition. So I thought this would be a great topic to discuss today. And to really delve into it, I'm excited to welcome back our esteemed head trainer and founder of D8 Training, Nevin Antic. Welcome back, Nevin.
It's great to be here again, Emery.
I must not have been too terrifying after the first episode if you're brave enough to return for another round.
We'll find out about this after this one, I think.
So. Well, I have had a bit of practice, so I may not go as easy on you this time.
Can't wait. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Well, since your first episode, we've received a flood of inquiries about weight loss, muscle gain, and overall body transformation. If you haven't had a chance to listen to our first podcast, I highly recommend tuning in. It is episode 1, and in the podcast, we covered a wealth of invaluable information, including the importance of strength training, habit stacking, nutrition essentials, and the benefits of prioritizing protein intake. So maybe after this episode, tune into that one if you haven't already. Let's kick things off by discussing various diet approaches, fat loss strategies, and muscle building techniques. Then to finish up at the end, I have lots of questions from our clients and listeners, which I'll just fire at you. How does that sound?
Awesome. Ready to get going.
All right, straight to business.
Like usual, hey? Straight to business.
Diets, diets, diets. It seems like there's a new one hitting the scene every week. Can you give us an overview of the different approaches when it comes to different diets?
The way I generally look at it is, when it comes to diets, the first thing to consider is what your goal is. You know, what are you trying to achieve? And there's really generally four options or four categories. So after you know what your goals are, you then need to make sure you've planned it out. And those four kind of categories or four options really are based in terms of, one is maintenance. And this really involves a balanced approach to eating and exercising aimed at essentially preserving your current body shape. So this is great when you're super busy and you just don't, you know, you just want to maintain your current fitness, where health and fitness may not be a huge priority at that part in your life.
So it's, I'm happy with the way that I look and I just want to continue maintaining the way that I look.
Correct, because that's going to probably require the least amount of effort. The second one is what's referred to as a recomposition. So this is ultimately where you're trying to build muscle and lose fat at the same time. Quite a few people want to try do this. It is one of the ones that's a little bit more challenging to achieve though. Thirdly is, you know, depending on the fitness space that you're in, quite often it's people refer to as bulking or trying to essentially add muscle, ideally with the minimal amount of fat as well.
Bulking, I often think of bodybuilders when it comes to bulking. Is it just targeted at bodybuilders or can anyone bulk?
It's the same approach. It's just called bulking generally in the fitness space. You know, for us, we like to refer to it as adding muscle. People will have a differentiate between clean bulking, which is eating generally normal, healthy foods, with dirty bulking, which is just eating whatever you can with a lot of junk food. And that usually comes with unwanted, you know, fat gains as well as muscle. But in terms of, I guess, to answer your question, I often recommend adding muscle to clients as well. You know, if somebody comes in and they're lacking muscle, it might be a period of time where they need to focus on building muscle rather than losing more fat.
So when they need to add muscles, what do you recommend? Clean eating or dirty eating?
Definitely clean eating, but sometimes it can be challenging for some people. Some people are very, what's referred to as a hard gainer, so they struggle to put on muscle and size and weight. So with that, they might have to have a balanced approach where it's mostly clean eating, but then they throw in a little bit of junk food just because generally it's easier to consume that much, that many calories to be able to hit your targeted goals.
Clean eating, does that include pastas and carbs and...
Yeah, correct, yeah. So, you know, basically your whole grains, fruits, vegetables, meat, things of that nature. Generally, it's referred to as, you know, unprocessed foods versus processed foods. There are some variants. And then the last one, and this is the one most people, I guess, are interested in, is, you know, leaning out. Essentially losing fat, not losing weight, losing fat. You know, and there's a key difference between the two there. Strength training is such an important aspect when fat loss is a focus. You know, so the focus really is on stripping our bodies of fat, not muscle. So we want to make sure when we're losing weight that we're actually predominantly losing fat, not muscle at the same time.
Is it in leaning out that you lose the extra kilos and the unwanted body fat?
Correct, yeah. So that's where the focus is. The focus really in that area is just to lose as much fat as we can. And that's where ultimately we start to, people say tone up. A lot of times that's part of it. Also, obviously adding muscle as well if we can. But generally when we're trying to lean out, we're trying to lose the unnecessary fat, you know, our bellies, and depending on where you predominantly store your body fat as well. They're kind of your four key categories. And then from there, you need to choose a nutritional approach that works for you. And when I say that, you know, that basically means, are you eating a traditional diet? Or do you prefer a diet such as keto, intermittent fasting, Mediterranean, vegan, carnivore? And you've probably heard of quite a few others. That's ultimately what you need to do, you know, understand what the nutritional approach is. But first, you need to understand where you're at. Do you need to add muscle, which means you're going to need to eat more calories? Do you need to lean out, which means you need to eat less calories? Or do you just want to maintain? Stay where you're at.
When it comes to dieting, the first thing that needs to be considered is what are you trying to achieve? And there are really four options. There's maintenance, and then this involves a balanced approach to eating and exercising. You're happy with the way you look and you don't want to change it. Then there's recomposition, and this is where you want to turn fat into muscle. So it's really about transforming the way that you look. And then there's bulking, and that's adding muscle and size. And then lastly, leaning out, which is losing fat. So really focusing on losing fat, getting leaner, and shedding those extra few kilos. Based on your goal, then you need to plan it out and choose the approach you take of whatever diet suits you.
That's right. Yeah. Hopefully that's what I articulated earlier. It sounds about right.
Thank you. You have. You definitely simplified it for me and how important it is defining my goal. Now I want the good stuff. I want to know how to get rid of fat. I wish there was a magic pill that I could take and boom, it's gone. But I know that's not true. I know it's about creating a healthy lifestyle that works for you and my goals, and then consistently applying this every single day. Now, I've heard you mention four or five key principles when it comes to a diet and how effective it is. Can you explain the five principles to me?
Yeah, sure. Just to kind of backtrack a little bit, you know, I think in my opinion, there is no perfect diet for everyone. We should all try different approaches because each one of us is unique and each one of us adapts differently to different types of foods. So when I outlined those different, you know, nutritional approaches earlier, whether that's intermittent fasting, keto, Mediterranean, and or vegan, you should probably try a couple of those and find what works well for you and your body and also your lifestyle. But I do believe though, when I say that, is that there are five main principles when it comes to any diet's effectiveness. And this is the same for fat loss or muscle gain. In this context, what I'm about to talk about though, I'll keep it related to fat loss just to keep things simple because they do change. The first one is a calorie balance. So essentially how many calories you eat per day relative to how many calories you actually burn. The second is what we refer to as macronutrient amounts. So this is the breakdown and split of how many grams of protein to how many grams of carbohydrates and how many grams of fat you eat each day. The third one is nutrient timing. Ultimately, it's when and how you spread your total food intake across daily meals. Then we have food composition, you know, where the source of the macronutrients you consume is coming from. You know, so in simple terms, is the food a whole food or is it processed?
Okay, so with that, when you say the sources of macronutrients, I know chicken's got protein, the protein coming from the chicken.
Yes, but it's more around, where is that chicken coming from? Is that chicken heavily processed or is that a whole chicken that you've cooked in the oven and it's come from a free range source? So it's just where your food's coming from. So a great example might be something as you're having, like you said, chicken. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you're having a heavily processed burger that you might go have from McDonald's. So those two kind of meals are completely different because one is very unprocessed, it's a whole chicken that you've cooked. The other one is a heavily processed meat that you would have gotten from McDonald's. Ultimately, they still have their own calorie amounts. It's more about where the foods come from. And then the fifth one is supplement use and hydration. In simple terms, how much and what type of dietary supplements you consume and your level of hydration. They're those five key areas that give you an idea of the effectiveness of a diet. And each one has a different level of percentages in terms of getting to your goals.
Which one or two are the most important? You know, what can I do to get 80% of the result with only 20% of effort?
And I love that thinking. You know, you're always focusing on what you'll get the best results from, so ultimately return on your investment. And I think that's great thinking. You know, in something like this, we're all busy with our time. So I think your intuition is correct, because some of these give you more effectiveness to your diet compared to others. A lot of people think that supplements will give them a huge boost, but they usually don't. And you'll find out as the stats as I go through this. You know, I'll start off with the ones that give you the most results. And this is based on research on what they've done on you know, thousands and thousands of people. So the first one, and it's probably no surprise, is the calorie balance. This equates to about 50% of your diet's effectiveness. So it's the most important one. And obviously there are various different diets, which we spoke about earlier, like low carb, low fat, high protein, vegetarian, keto. The reality is that they all work if they're followed correctly, because all of these diets focus on one thing ultimately, which is a calorie restriction of some type. So underlying to all that, in simple terms, it's about burning more energy than you consume.
Which makes sense. Like if I eat 1,000 calories, that I burn 1,200 calories in the day through exercise and general day-to-day activities, I guess I'm expected to lose minus 200 calories.
Correct. That's right. So if we think about it, if we take in more energy than we use or excrete, we gain weight. Generally, we're eating more than we're actually burning off. Then if we take in less energy than we use or excrete, we lose weight. And then finally, if we take in the same amount of energy than we use, then we stay the same. Okay, so you need to understand obviously what your goals are and then apply those principles. And you know, and this is the most important principle. And if you get this right, you get about 50% of your diet's effectiveness. So if you're going to focus on one thing, this is the one I'd focus on. It won't get you the 80% that you're after, what you were asking before, but it'll get you half of what the other four would give you. So having at least a decent understanding of how many calories you eat is going to be important.
Now, it doesn't matter where these calories come from. If I eat 1,000 calories worth of chocolate, and that's all I eat the whole day, but I've exerted 1,200 calories of energy, will I still lose weight?
In simple terms, yes. And that actually comes down to the macronutrient amounts, which is the next point. Really good point for that one for us to cover. The macronutrient amounts covers you for 30% of your diet's effectiveness. So remember, this is the effectiveness of the diet. So getting the right amount of protein, fats, and carbs. And this is highly controversial depending on who you speak to, because each diet have their own preferences. And from my point of view, I think this depends on the individual and everyone should experiment with what works for them. If we look at the research, it tells us that we need the following as a minimum. So this is just a good idea to get an understanding of how much you need from each of these macronutrients from a daily perspective. The first one is fat, and that's 0.6 grams of fat per kilogram of body weight. And this is required for optimal hormone function. To give you an idea, if you're an 80 kilogram person, you want to be consuming somewhere between 45 to 50 grams of fat as a minimum per day.
Now, when you say per kilogram of body fat, is that the body fat that I am today or is it my goal body fat?
It depends. If you have someone that has a lot of weight to lose, you can use an ideal body weight target. But for most people, it's probably based on what they're currently at the moment. So that's fat. The second one is carbs. This one has a wide range because if you speak to different people, different diets, they'll have a lot of fluctuation. The research shows us ideally we want to get 0.6 grams of carbs per kilogram of body weight. For an 80 kilogram person, this is only about 45 to 50 grams of carbs per day. There are specific diets that try to eliminate carbs completely, and that's kind of trying to target a different approach. But generally for most people, this is what they're saying is a minimum.
Do you think eliminating carbs completely is a good approach?
I think it depends on the individual. Some people actually thrive on that environment and it works better from a fat loss perspective. When I look at this space, I think that's a low amount, mainly for two reasons. I like a higher amount of carbs because it's going to help you fuel your workouts. Second of all, it also makes it quite a lot easier from an eating standpoint. Eliminating all carbs makes it really difficult because you're limited by the amount of types of foods that you can eat. So having certain carbs in your diet is useful because most of the time that's what's the most accessible to us today. Usually what I recommend is find a threshold that works for you. Play around with a few things and get an understanding of what that is. The fat and the carbs, from my point of view, is generally the second most important. The first, mostly protein. My recommendations usually come from around protein and starting with protein. The bare minimum based on the research is that we should be eating at least 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. And this is based on people that are very sedentary and basically don't do much. This would equate to about 65 grams of protein for an 80 kilogram person.
Now, I know in our last episode, we spoke about the amount of protein that should be eaten per kilogram of ideal body weight was 1.5 to 2 grams.
That's right. And my recommendation is to stay with that. You know, while you can survive, and these thresholds are about minimums and surviving, you can survive on 0.8 grams. My recommendation is exactly what we just referred to, is that 1.5 to 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, especially if you're focused on strength training and your health. So you should be aiming for those numbers. So for an 80 kilogram person, that's somewhere between 120 and 160 grams of protein per day, generally split up between your meals.
If I was doing nothing all day, sitting on the couch, watching TV, 0.8 is probably the right way to go. Whereas if you're active, out and about, doing gym, going that, you need to go that higher amount because of all the energy that you're exerting.
Yeah, but it's probably more down to making sure that you're not losing muscle as part of that. But also the other reason we recommend protein is the most satiating as well. It helps keep us fuller for longer, especially on a fat loss diet. Eating 100 grams of protein is usually a lot more satiating than eating 100 grams of sugars from sweetened foods.
What's satiating?
Is how full you feel after you've eaten something. And I'm sure you've had those meals where you're like, wow, I feel so full. And sometimes it's, you know, you've had high calorie foods that have done that. Other times it's been very low calorie foods that have done that. And that's ultimately what we're trying to find. It's trying to foods that are highly satisfying while at the same time being low in calories and giving us the macronutrients that we need.
What are some low calorie foods that are filling?
Things like pumpkin, squash. So they're very low calorie. They're very volumizing and very filling. Lean proteins are another source, fruits and vegetables, obviously, as well, and even whole grains. So if you think about the first two principles, combined together, they give you 80% of your results. So it'd be wise to spend your efforts on those two areas as opposed to the next three. So just a reminder, the first one is the calorie balance, making sure you're eating the right amount of calories. And the second one is your macronutrients amount, the breakdown between the different macronutrient splits. Once you've set your protein, ultimately, what you do is you use your remaining calories and you split that up between fats and carbohydrates, depending on what you prefer. If you like higher fat foods, have more of those. If you like more carbohydrates-based foods, then have more of those as opposed to fats. But ultimately, you set it based on your protein goals.
But how do I know how much protein, carbs, and fats are in each of the foods?
So this is where it can be a little bit challenging, and it's a matter of, one, educating yourself. There's lots of fitness apps out there, something like MyFitnessPal, will give you the calorie amounts for a food if you don't know. If you're buying foods with labels on them, they will always be listed. So if you look at the back of the food, you know, as an example, if you're having you're buying a boiled egg, if it's in a label and if it's in a little pack, it'll say at the back, it'll say a total calorie amount. Then it'll have a breakdown of the fats and the proteins and if there's any carbohydrates in there. So you can get an idea of what some of these foods contain. Like I said, having an app like MyFitnessPal will also help you because you'll be educated to make better choices in the future.
And I'll put the MyFitnessPal app link in the description of the podcast.
Perfect. That was the first two principles. Principle number three, this is around nutrient timing. And this would only give you 10% of your diet's effectiveness. In simple terms, when you have your meals, it's do you have one big meal per day? Do you have three or four meals? Or do you have six meals a day? It's essentially how you're splitting up those meals throughout the day. And the research does show us there is a benefit to more meals when it comes to building muscle and sparing muscle. So if you're focused on performance and have the time, then four meals are going to be better than two, just like three meals would be better than one. My recommendation, though, is to have something that suits your lifestyle. You know, a looser diet where you have 75% adherence over a month will have far better results than a diet where you're perfect for only 1-2 days a month. There is no point having the most research-backed diet if you can't follow it. Find something that suits your lifestyle and that you can manage. And if that's only one or two meals a day, you're better off doing that, sticking with your macronutrient amounts, as opposed to having six meals throughout the day, which you can't sustain.
So it's that consistency and being able to do it on an ongoing basis.
Correct. So people that are a little bit more performance driven, they may want to have four or five meals a day because it's going to be better from a muscle growth and muscle sparing perspective. But for the majority of our clients, 2-3 meals is going to be great. Try to spread your protein amounts between those 2-3 meals.
And what about snacking?
As long as it fits in within your calories and you're able to manage the snacking, that's fine. I do recommend try to minimize that and have actual main meals. And then if you need one or two snacks to bridge the gap, that's fine. But look for snacks that are satiating, low calorie to an extent, rather than looking for sweet things, because that was probably going to just increase your appetite for more sweet food later in the day. So as an example, if you find you're struggling at work, you know, you might have some cravings, have a piece of fruit. Don't go for that muffin and realize that, you know, that apple might contain 100 calories as opposed to a muffin which may have contained 400 calories. The fourth principle is around food composition. And you kind of brought that up a little bit earlier. And this is mostly where your food is coming from. And if it's a whole food or if it's a highly processed food. This one is surprising to most people. Most people would think that it would make a bigger difference where your sources of calories are coming from. And remember, what I'm referring to here is purely based on body composition, not your health. While paying attention to food composition, you know, eating healthy foods most of the time doesn't have a huge effect on appearance or fat loss, it does have a significant effect on health. So I don't just recommend eating highly processed foods. We want to stick to wholesome foods where you can get, that you can, you know, you can eat most of the time, as one, these will be more filling and healthier for you in the long run. So I still aim to eat whole foods 90% of the time. And then obviously you can indulge in some more heavily processed foods. In saying that, like I mentioned before, you can hit your body fat goals and lean out eating purely processed foods. The challenge will be they won't be as healthy for you because you're not getting as many micronutrients or vitamins and minerals from those foods. And it's also a little bit more challenging because they're not as satiating, because you won't feel as full because they're so heavily processed.
And then there's other effects with not eating, well, eating more processed foods. You feel tired, you're not performing at your highest ability.
Correct, because a lot of times, a lot of those foods don't have the micronutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, and you end up creating deficiencies, and your body needs some of these to function correctly. So some of those can come from that as well. And then the final and the fifth one, and this is the one that I said at the start, a lot of people jump to these, is the supplements and the hydrations. And this is really ultimately only 5% of your diet's effectiveness. If we think about it from a pyramid of sorts, we've spoken about the base, we've spoken about the middle of the pyramid. Now this is the top. While supplements can help, it shouldn't be the first thing we focus on. Ultimately, it only gives you 5% of the results. So I think too many people are quick to jump on it and, like you said, you know, be willing to spend the money on supplements, where I think they're better off putting that money into better quality nutrition, buying better quality food for them, which will have a better health outcome for them in the long run.
So there really isn't a magic pill?
Not that I'm aware of, not yet.
And you mentioned hydration as well. I thought it was important to get a right amount of water intake per day.
Yeah, and that's correct. Remember, we're not talking about healthier. We're talking about body composition, losing fat. Mm-hmm. So you can get away with being, you know, dehydrated. You may not feel optimal, but it won't have a blunting effect in terms of your fat loss. In saying that, I still recommend make sure you're fully hydrated and you do that because we're coming from a health perspective as well. But it's not the key component of what happens in a fat loss diet.
So if I'm losing fat, what I really need to focus on is a calorie balance, eating less than what I'm exerting every day, and the macronutrients, as opposed to the staying hydrated, the supplement use, and what food I'm eating. However, to be able to perform at my optimal, whole foods that I eat, staying hydrated and looking after my body is important.
Correct. That's exactly right. And we hear it all the time. It's sometimes understanding what these components do and just being a bit more educated and aware. So then, like I said, we can make better choices.
Well, you've definitely simplified it. Now I get the difference between the two, whereas I thought they were interrelated before.
It is an in-depth topic, so hopefully I haven't confused too many people with some of these components, but it is really about that. What is going to be the most effective diet approach to me reaching my goals? You know, if people are interested or curious and some of our members, just reach out and grab us and I can delve into deeper.
Thanks, Nevin. That was really useful. I got so much value. And as you know, because you provided me this advice a couple of months ago, I've already started looking at the calorie balance and I've noticed a difference. And it's been great substituting some of the different foods. Like now I know that berries have a lower calorie amount than bananas. I may focus on eating more berries as opposed to bananas and then substituting potatoes with pumpkin and squash. And then eating protein first. I've put protein smoothies as the way that I start my day and definitely, you know, noticing a difference there.
Great. And those are all simple changes. You know, a lot of times we speak with clients, or what can you make that's a 5-minute change to your day that's going to affect, you know, your body composition. So thinking about those small wins as opposed to being really, I guess, specific and doing something like calorie counting all your meals, which we know is really, really challenging.
Well, and I do use the MyFitnessPal app and it's great. It's really able to show me the calories per food. And I've had quite a few different surprises of what may have more calories than, whereas others have less. All right, client questions. You ready?
Is this like rapid fire or is this an articulate answer? What would you like?
I want the best answer for the client. So I'll rapid fire. You take your time and answer it properly.
Glad you said that because as you can tell, I like to talk on these conversations. So,
yeah. All right, we've had so many questions come in and I'd really love to get your insights on these. One, do I have to count all the calories I eat in a day to lose fat?
You know, like a lot of answers, it depends. And with health and fitness, things are not always black and white. So in short, no, you don't. Would you get better results counting calories? The answer is most likely yes, if you do it properly. Calorie counting, I say, is the gold standard. So if you do it correctly and you track your macros, you will lose fat. Because at the end of the day, as we spoke about earlier, it's about energy balance. So you need to burn more energy than you consume. The challenge for most of us is that we're time poor and we don't have the ability to prepare all of our meals. So what I actually recommend is educating yourself on rough calorie amounts of different foods. And then this empowers you to make better choices in the future. We spoke about that example earlier of, you know, you want a snack at lunch. So if you know that a muffin contains 400 calories, but an apple contains only about 100 calories, you are now more empowered to make a decision about what food is going to help you with your health goals. As I mentioned, yes, calorie counting is the gold standard, but I also know how challenging it can be. So just empowering yourself and understanding what different calorie amounts can actually help you.
Your answer to that question, I think, is going to help the next question. What about eyeballing your calories? I've heard you talk about this in the past, getting a rough idea of how much you are consuming by looking at the food.
Exactly right. You know, there are simpler ways to still get good results without counting all your calories in an app. You know, a simple way is to actually use your hand as a measuring guide. We don't always have a calorie app around, so we can just use our hands. We generally have our hands with us always, or like to think we do. Following this approach will dramatically simplify the eating and tracking process. And it's nearly as accurate as calorie counting once you get the hang of it. I'll give you an example of that. I know it's hard to picture because it's an audio-only podcast, but a portion of protein is generally one palm size will give you around 20 to 30 grams of protein. So, you know, if you have a look at your hand right now, and if you think about, you know, a cooked piece of chicken, that's generally going to be about the size of your palm. It's going to be about 20 to 30 grams of protein. So that's a good way with most meats, you can get an idea of how much protein you're getting. If you require 40 grams of protein for a meal, you think about, well, I need about two palms worth of meat on my plate right now. Generally lean meat is what we're referring to. And then a portion of carbs is a cupped hand. So if you put a cupped hand, it's usually about 20 to 30 grams of carb. So if you think about it, you know, a cup of rice in your hand or a cup of pasta, that's generally about 20, 30 grams.
And that's cooked?
That's cooked. That's right. Yeah. And obviously it depends on the food. Some foods vary a little bit, but it just gives you a general guideline to work with.
And you spoke about lean protein. What's lean protein?
So lean proteins are pieces of meat that don't have a lot of fat content to them. Think of chicken breast, lean cuts of meat, something like a porterhouse. Chicken thigh is kind of in the middle. Then you have some really fatty meats. Things like a ribeye or very marbled beef will have lots of fat content. It'll still have the protein, but it'll just have a lot of extra fat on there. So they're the two main differences with those ones. So generally you want to try to, when you're on a fat loss diet, you want to try and limit the extra fat, unless you know it's part of your diet, and then make up your fats from some other sources. You know, a portion of fat is basically a thumb, and that's usually between 7 to 12 grams of fat. So if you think about like a piece of butter or even like, you know, nuts and things like that, they're generally going to be about that much. And then you've got, you know, got a portion of vegetables, which is like a fist. Generally, that will have very low calories. So if you think about a salad, they're going to have very low calories, minimal if any. You know, most of the time, we don't even count those. So if you're interested in that, you know, just reach out and let us know. We can provide you a bit of a guide. It gives you an informational graphic. Doing that empowers you to kind of, like I said, understand, okay, this meal was probably somewhere around 80 grams of protein and 60 grams of carbs. And, you know, it might be off by 5 or 10 grams either way, as long as you're kind of consistent and you kind of monitor your approach over time, and then you can adjust as you need to. And that's going to save you a lot more time as opposed to calorie counting.
Now, to get this infographic, they can just DM you on Facebook Instagram, or if they're in the gym, just reach out to us.
Correct.
What foods do you classify as bad and you should stay away from?
And I've probably changed my viewpoint over the years. I think it's more about making better choices as opposed to, you know, demonizing certain foods. So instead of thinking good and bad, think in terms of eat less, eat some, and then eat more. And with this approach, you can occasionally indulge in some eat less foods without the guilt, knowing that in reasonable amounts, they're actually not going to set you back or ruin all the progress that you made. And then the goal becomes simple. Aim to progress to consuming more of the eat more foods and eat some options while reducing the eat less. And, you know, research shows that any effort, you know, no matter how imperfect, can result in real and measurable progress. Really about learning and accepting that even a little effort can translate into real progress and health benefits over the long run. For more moderate goals, as an example, a target of 75 to 80% consistency is often the sweet spot to make continual progress while still living an enjoyable, sustainable life. For people with more advanced goals, a target closer to 90% consistency is often needed, you know, to push the boundaries and reach for more extreme levels of leanness and body composition goals.
So nothing's really bad. It's what's better to eat less of.
Correct. And understanding that if you're eating some of those eat less foods, you know, that we should, if you're eating a lot of those, well, the goal is over time is to reduce that and eat more of the eat some, or ideally eat more foods.
All right. This is an interesting question. Okay. So some people asked about higher volume foods and if you like them. Can you start with what are higher volume foods? Because I've never heard of them before.
So in simple terms, it's foods that are quite filling, where the food volume, you know, or the size is quite high, but the food is actually low in calories. A few examples of this would be things like leafy salads, quite a few vegetables, and things like we mentioned before, pumpkin, zucchini, squash, and even things like lean meats. Generally, the size of the food, if you think about leafy green salads, it's quite large, but in terms of the calorie amount, it's very, very small. Broccoli, cauliflower would be other examples of that. You know, if you ate a kilo of broccoli or cauliflower, it's going to have minimal calories, but it's going to be very hard to eat all that food on top of all the digestion that you might have will to come along with it. I guess to give you a different viewpoint, and this might help you understand the difference between high volumizing foods versus high calorie foods. On one end, you know, the scale, we might have high volume foods. And on the other, we might have high calorie foods. So if we start from the high volume end, it'll be, you know, the food categories that are the most volumizing are vegetables. Then we have fruits, then lean meat and whole grains. And then you've got fatty meat. And then on the end, we've got junk food. And finally, fats, which are the least volumizing and the most calorie dense. So we've just kind of worked our way through the order of what's going to be the most volumizing compared to going to the most, you know, calorie dense. So hopefully that gives you a bit of an overview. And I know it's, again, difficult over audio, but think about, you know, we want to stick to the side with the high volumizing foods, which is the vegetables, the fruits, the lean proteins, and the whole grains, as opposed to the fattier meats. And then we've got our junk food and then fats.
All right. So why do we want to overeat some of these calorie dense foods?
Great question. And when food is tasty, you know, based on the research, we tend to want to eat more of it. You know, just like when food is bland or boring, we tend to have less desire for it. So limiting or avoiding highly palatable foods can make your fat loss diet adherence easier and more likely. It's much harder to overeat broccoli and chicken than it is pizza or ice cream. I actually read a study recently that shared the top five most addictive foods. I'm actually going to put you on the spot on this one and ask you what you think some of those foods might be.
Definitely put me on the spot. I'd say chocolate because I'm definitely addicted to chocolate. Five. So we'll go chocolate, pizza, pastas, dairy, like cheeses. So what am I at? Three. Chocolate, breads, pastas, cheese, soft drinks. Is that classified as a food?
Look, that's a great start. You actually nailed the top two. Even intuitively, we have an understanding of what they are. These foods that have came out in terms of what the most addictive foods are is pizza number one, chocolate number two, chips as number three, cookies as number four, and then ice cream as number five.
Oh, I should have guessed ice cream. I love ice cream.
Don't we all? Based on what the author stated was that these processed foods can be as addictive, and this was really interesting, as addictive as cigarettes, alcohol, and even cocaine. So, and it's because of their salty, the crunchy, the fatty, the sweet flavors actually hijack dopamine receptors in your brains, which actually creates like a food high. And then when you come down from the food high, you end up craving more of that. Just like cigarettes, you know, we know that processed foods are harmful for our health, which leads to obesity, metabolic dysfunction, and other chronic diseases. But unfortunately, unlike cigarettes, you know, processed foods are everywhere and they're widely encouraged and accepted.
Well, I have heard in some of these companies, they've got a whole department that talks about on how they can create the food so that people will eat more and more of it. Like even in the chips, they shape it a certain way so it has the right crunch that will want people buying more because they like the sound, they like the texture and how it feels. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me now that you've said that. And now I'm going to finish with one last question for today. So you'll have to come back on again because I've still got lots more questions from our clients and listeners.
Sure.
This one, I enjoy coffee and so does a lot of the world. What are your thoughts on coffee? Is it useful?
From a health perspective, coffee can be quite controversial depending on who you speak to. I'm going to answer it from a fat loss perspective because caffeine has a threefold benefit based on my understanding on a fat loss diet. First of all, when consumed in a drink, like any other liquid, the caffeine source will actually take up some of the stomach space and it'll help make you feel a bit full. More importantly, caffeine is an appetite suppressant and so it can actively reduce your hunger throughout the day. And then third of all, caffeine actually makes you feel more energetic, you know, which can promote more movement, things like, you know, high non-exercise activity thermogenesis, also called NEAT, and better training. These three benefits together, as well as generally feeling more energetic while on a fat loss diet, can actually make adherence a lot easier. From a fat loss perspective, body composition, I think caffeine is quite useful. From a health perspective, I don't actually know enough because I've read too many studies to say either way. So I'll leave that out of this answer.
I'm impressed at how many of those big words you remember, like in that last question, but throughout the interview as well.
We may be in the gym, but we're nerds in the gym. So yeah, we enjoy that aspect of it. And I should also mention, you know, when I speak about caffeine or coffee, I'm referring to generally black or minimal amounts of additives, things like milk in there, because yes, you might be drinking caffeine, but if you're having a large amount of milk with it, it's obviously going to affect your overall calorie balance. So generally the recommendations around these is have your coffee black or have a minimal amount of milk in there, just tolerable enough so you can actually drink it. Now, don't get me wrong, I know people love their coffees. Just understand that that's going to come along with 300-400 calories of extra milk. So just be mindful of that.
Well, like I said, I've got more questions that we'll get into next time. I won't even ask you, will you come back? You don't have a choice. But thank you again. Like, I learned so much and, you know, loved how we talked about what's the goal with your diet? Where, what are you trying to achieve? Maintain, recompose, bulk or lean out? And then based on the goals is how you go about the diet. And there's no right or wrong in terms of diet. It's about finding one that works for you and experimenting along the way. And two of my favorite foods, ice cream and chocolate, are addictive. Thank you everyone for listening. Did you get value? Do you know someone else that would benefit from hearing what was shared today? Please subscribe, like, and share our show. Your support will help us continue and grow to bring such valuable content to you and others. Until next time, dominate your life.